rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Harlequins are champions of England. I don't think anyone would have said that 6 months ago, but Quins edged out Exeter Chiefs in the most thrilling Premiership final of them all. Meanwhile, the Lions have finally landed in South Africa, but are they going to turn around and come straight back home again? The country is back in lockdown and there's a COVID outbreak in the Springbok camp. We'll look at the likely options for a tour that seems cursed from the stars. I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and joining me today are Ruck regulars Owen Slot and Alex Lowe, plus a couple of very special guests, former Quins chief executive Mark Evans and Wallaby legend and very proud father Michael Liner. An extraordinary weekend of rugby, all of which happened at Twickenham, England's headquarters. Without doubt, the best Premiership final of them all. We thought we'd seen the most amazing game the week before, the miracle of Ashton Gate, where Quins came back from 28 points to 5 down. And could they do it again? And yes, they could. Michael, I have to start with you as a father who's had plenty of amazing days at Twickenham, not least winning the World Cup final there. Well, I mean, what was that like for you watching as a Quins fan, but more importantly as a dad of Lewis, who had the most extraordinary game himself?
Yeah, thanks, Lawrence, and thanks for your kind words on the TV on Saturday as well. But it was a really amazing experience. The last 2 weeks, you mentioned the Bristol game. I've never seen anything like that. And then to back it up on Saturday again, you know, and against two teams, let's be honest, they're pretty good teams. You look at the Bristol squad, you look at the Exeter squad, what they've achieved. I mean, amazing that a Quins group that in January this year were, you know, couldn't win a game for love of money. They looked unhappy. And to turn that around and do what they did on Saturday was truly amazing. A great bunch of people, I think. That's a really important thing first up. But as a dad watching that was an interesting experience, I must say. I was with a friend who we went down to Bristol to watch at the semi-final. And I rang him on Friday and said, because we went to breakfast here in Richmond before we went down to Bristol. So I said, we've got to do that again. We've got to order the same stuff. We've got to do the same things all again. Very superstitious. But I must say, Lawrence, yes, I've done a lot of stuff. Twickenham, as I said, Twickenham's been pretty good to me over the years and our family. But, Saturday was the best day, my best experience at Twickenham, because there's something different about watching your son, you know, sitting there watching your son do something like that with a great bunch of guys and achieve something pretty extraordinary. Not him, the whole team. And that far outweighs, me running around the pitch doing, you know, trying to win stuff. There was something different and much more rewarding a much more of an emotional roller coaster ride through the whole thing that actually made Saturday probably the best day I've ever had at Twickenham, and close to the best day I've ever had in rugby, I must admit, closely followed by last week.
Well, listen, congratulations. And also, you know, listen, the performance of your son, and we'll get onto that later, has been quite extraordinary. And I mean, I believe he told his teammates that he was actually going to score in the right-hand corner. The only thing he got wrong was the fact that he scored twice in that corner. Not just
to
once,
make sure.
Just to make doubly sure. But
Hang on a sec. Can I just say, do we think that one day Lewis will look back on this and describe it as me just running around and doing stuff?
That's probably what he looks at it, how he looks at it at the moment. I don't know. That seems to be the way Quinns play. You know, they seem to be smiling and enjoying it all, and you know, winning helps, of course, but they're really you know, it's a cliche, you know, there's a culture and we play for each other and all those sort of things, but it just seems to be happening at Quinns for some reason. And yeah, he seemed to enjoy himself, that's for sure. Maybe not so much in the first half when he was making a couple of errors, but that for me was a great thing, to be able to, as a young kid, just focus on the next job no matter what happened behind him. You know, a couple of mistakes are going to happen, but it's about not dwelling on them and getting on with it. So I was very pleased to see him turn a couple of errors in the first half around and come back strong, as did the team.
Mark Evans, you're a man who's seen every single emotion at this great club, Harlequins. I mean, just put that into context, and not just the performance that we saw, but as Michael said, you know, they obviously, with Paul Gustard leaving, you know, they've given the young coaches their heads, and just the way that they've turned things around. I mean, they played Bristol last week, who finished top of the league in the regular season. They played Exeter Chiefs in the final, who finished second. Two of the best defensive teams in the country, statistically. And they scored, the best part of 13 tries against those two teams in two matches. I mean, it's just extraordinary performances. And, you know, where's all that come from, Mark?
I'm not entirely sure. Obviously, I'm still fairly close with some people at the club from the owners downwards. But, you know, I'm not close to the playing department, other than still mates with Danny and Brownie and a couple of the old guys. But you don't have to be too close to see that there has been an absolute transformation. I've got to be saying, I'm a fan still. You know, it's been, they're the team I follow. I have a great emotional connection with the place. And I have to say, round about Christmas early, I was in despair. I thought we looked a rabble. I don't think that's hyperbole. I watched every game and I just couldn't see where the next win was coming from. We didn't look to have any confidence. And then, to be fair to the management and the ownership and the board, they made a really tough call, because Paul Gascott hadn't been in post that long. And, you know, he'd gone, I think, sixth and fifth, which was not a disastrous end result. But there was clearly something wrong, and they recognised it. And I'm not entirely sure what it was, but the team didn't look comfortable in itself. And there were too many rumours coming out of the joint that told, you know, anybody in the game knew that something really wasn't right. So they made a tough call. The interesting thing is why it's gone so well. What is it that is this just part of a move? Quite a lot of sectors for a more collaborative leadership, because they've certainly got that. You know, everyone's saying, well, who picks the team? And the guys, we chat about it and we give greater weight to certain of the people in certain positions. But in the end, we come to an agreement, and that's the team that goes out. And they haven't shied away from big decisions in selection. I think their selection has been pretty spot on all the way through. And the last thing I say about it is that Mike's already alluded to it. I mean, people talk about culture a lot, and it becomes a little bit of a bit of a cliche, and it's hard to define, but you know when it's there and you know when it's not, and it wasn't, and it is. And, you know, that was one of, I was watching with my son at the ground, and it will go down in one of the happiest days of my life, you know. And that's not, it's just a wonderful, to go along with Bristanbul from the week before. sorry, I nicked that from Danny Kerr. I think it's great. it's just the sheer enjoyment and the I'm so pleased for the owners, who are just really, really good, honest people who've stuck with it for the best part of 25 years. I'm just chuffed to bits for them.
Alex, I'm going to come to you because you were actually at Twickenham as well. I mean, a lot of people think, because I played for Wasps for 20 years, that I would be supporting Exeter Chiefs, but actually the reverse is actually the case. I love the championing the underdog. Anyone who knows, you know, me, that knows I've played in a number of finals where we were written off on many an occasion. And I just thought it was an extraordinary performance from start to finish. I did question whether emotionally the performance at Ashton Gate, would they be able to lift themselves up again in the same way as England weren't able to do that in Yokohama, because it was almost like an All Blacks performance, you know, against Bristol. Would they be able to emotionally do that? And clearly they did. The coaches, you know, had a very quiet start to the week, you know, tried to just let them rest and recover almost mentally rather than anything else. And two things that stood out for me, the ambition of this Quinns team. When you're in a Premiership final against a worthy opponent, which Exeter Chiefs are, you get a penalty in the first few minutes of the game and it's bang in front of the sticks and it's about 30, 40 metres out. Difficult penalty. You still take it, right? You go 3 points. No, they didn't. They kicked for the corner. Not only did they kick for the corner, but Marcus Smith gave it everything and put it, you know, literally 5 metres from the line. Then they turn a Chiefs strength into a weakness, which is, you know, lesson one in the coaching manual. And they go for the, and they get the penalty try. And then fast forward 39 minutes to the last minute of the first half. They got a penalty under the sticks. They could have easily gone in. I think it would have taken them slightly into the lead. But no, they go for a scrum, which clearly was the right decision in the ascendancy. But by word, that was a ballsy call. And then Wilco Lowe scores this beautiful try. And so I think for all the play, their ambition and their ability, just they're such a dangerous team. But having the courage of your convictions, Alex, to go for it, they deserved it.
I completely agree. And we spoke to Danny Kerr after the game, who was just was on cloud nine. And I guess the question that the market asked is the question we've all been asking over the last few weeks is, you know, what has been that secret? And there've just been, you know, little insights here and there. And one of the things that Danny said after the game was, when they've got a collection of players with the talent that they have, with, you know, with himself, with Marcus Smith, with Alex Dombrandt, with Louis, with Tyrone Green, who comes into the team and, you know, and adds a new dimension in place of Mike Brown. He said 6 months ago they were trying to be put into a box, trying to be forced to play to a structure. And he said that actually, when you've got those players with a belief that was flowing through that team, you just have to let those players play the way that brings the best out of them. And they were just fully believing in that approach. And that comeback in Bristol was remarkable. There was a point in that second half when Sam Simmons had sort of got the game by the scruff of the neck and had dragged Exeter back into the ascendancy. They had all the momentum, but Harlequin still had the belief, and it needed a moment. It needed Marcus Smith to hitch kick, find Louis, and off he zooms into the corner. And it's just, you can't put your finger on what culture is, like Mark says, what belief is, but they just had it. They just knew it. Leicester City, when they won the Premier League, they were surfing this wave, and then it became, can they keep their balance? Can they ride it all the way home? And it felt like Quinns were riding that wave from really over the past 6 months, and then those last two games were just miraculous.
Also, by contrast, when Lawrence, you said they made those decisions just one after another, Quinns, those really guys sitting there, take the three, you know? And of course they don't. And Marcus's first kick, he smiled afterwards. He mishit it, but it came off for him, and it was one of those days. And, you know, he was aiming for the five. It went really close to the corner post. But, yes, you know, it was just one of those days. But in contrast, later on, and Exeter were doing the same thing, but then Exeter opted for the 3 points. I think there was probably about 15 minutes to go or so.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
And they were on the attack. Had they scored there, I think Quinns were out on their feet, and they opted for the three. And I said to my son beside me, I said, thank God they're taking the three. That's a result for Quinns. Yeah. And that turned out to be probably the difference. They blinked first.
I couldn't agree more. They had two, if you remember, Michael. I said exactly the same to my lad. Thank God they've taken the penalty. We're gone. We're there. That 9 points with 10 to go, I just can't see us doing it twice. And the first one they kicked to the corner and they had a go, didn't get it. Then they got another one and I went, yeah. Matt, please let them kick it. Please let them kick it. Because it's only a 5-point. They took it to get out beyond a penalty, didn't they? I think that's what they did. Yeah. But small margins.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, we'd have both taken the penalties either side of the beginning of the game and just before half time. But I think it's a tribute to, the journey that Quins have come on. I mean,
yeah.
You know, to take the line out in the first minute of the game and to do an Exeter to Exeter, you know, shows that you've got an incredible set piece. And then the scrum, which was, let's be honest, it wasn't just that scrum. They marmalised them in the scrum for most of the game, actually. And, you know, Joe Marler got the Peter Deacon medal, which I thought was excellent because you could have given it to any one of those players. But actually, that summed up. But equally, Wilco Lowe was giving Alex Hepburn all sorts of trouble as well. So I was very impressed. Owen, how come, having chosen to watch Quins every week, because it's less than a few miles from your house, on the one game that you should have chosen Quins, you actually chose to go up to Scotland and watch the other game of rugby that was going on the weekend?
Yeah, regulars to this podcast may understand that this is now the section where everyone laughs at me for getting it all wrong. So I went to Murrayfield to watch the opening and maybe the closing game of this Lions tour, but that's another question for probably later on in this podcast. And that was fun, but I was watching the score on my phone as I was writing my story from the press room, and then later on following what was going on at Twickenham. And initially I was going, oh, that looks quite a good game, but now I'm all right, I'm right up here. But quite quickly I realized that I hadn't made the right call there. But there's so much to talk about this game, the Harlequins game. One thing that struck me is we spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about the business of rugby and how's the numbers going to add up on that. But, geez, do you think that Harlequins are going to have a single empty seat at the Stoop next season if people are allowed in? I've already had people saying, you know, do you know if I can buy a season ticket and that, as if I'm, you know, head of sales there or whatever. But that place will fill up because they're such a great team to watch. And the other thing that we're sort of talking about is the whole rugby philosophy question about structure and formula, which was the earlier Quins under Paul Gustard, to unstructured rugby, which is what has prevailed. And most coaches tend to eventually plump for structure. And who knows if this is going to lead to a revolution or an evolution. But Bristol did try to do much of the same thing. And it wasn't as if Exeter were slouches on Saturday either. It's an amazing thing. And I just wonder how rugby's going to look next season.
I asked Danny Kerr about that after the game. And he said it's one of those years where optional defence has won championships. When it's usually the coaches who put the onus on defence. He said, yeah, this year it was optional defence, but that's how we play. And going forward, that is a fascinating question. Your marks has been a DOR. Can they win multiple championships playing like this, or will ultimately things have to tighten because this you couldn't surf that wave for so long?
I don't 100% agree that they're not quite structured because I'm such a nerd. I watch every game and that they play, and they're playing some. It's great to watch, but I tell you what, it's when you actually look at them all the time, they play in a very, very structured way. It's just with a lot of ball in hand. They do a lot of setup plays with Marler off the first ruck, right? They don't drive that many line. There's a lot of stuff you can say. Yeah, they're going to do this here and they're going to do this here. They're going to kick to the corner. That scrum, Michael and Lawrence were talking about just before halftime. I was screaming, scrum it. You got them, and it was a psychologically just before half time is such an important time in any rugby game. But I think they will try and play the same way. And I think the interesting thing is, you know how, and I was I have to confess, back in the autumn during the Nations Cup, the rugby was absolutely turgid.
Oh, yeah.
It was terrible. Just awful. We're only 8 months away from that. And most of the teams in the Premiership now are playing, to a greater or lesser extent, some pretty attractive ball-in-hand rugby. I don't think that the fences have become optional. I think it's the refereeing's changed.
Yeah, it has definitely.
The refereeing has significantly changed. Yeah. And it's interesting what's happening in rugby league in Australia at the moment. I'm sure Michael will know. The scores have gone up there too. And why is that? Well, it's because they've changed the speed of the play of the ball. And what's changed in rugby union in English Premiership is all, not entirely, but largely down to refereeing. The speed of the ball from the ruck is so much quicker than it was 6 months ago. And that means defences are trying just as hard, and they're just as well. They haven't become less organised. It's just more difficult. That interminable battle between offence and defence at the moment is weighted to the offence.
And let's not forget, as Mark's made the point, that the referees have such a big impact on how the game of rugby is, you know, is perceived and how it goes. So credit to him. But this ruck speed is a really interesting thing, because I think now, you know, it's being refereed differently. I think the tackler is being moved away so quickly now that it's almost become a play the ball almost as quick as rugby league in many ways. And the game is benefiting from that. There's a freedom amongst all these teams just to give it a go. And Owen, your point is relevant. You know, we're in the sport and entertainment business, and people don't want to come and watch stuff that's not exciting. And now we've been given that over the last few weeks, not just Quins, but Bristol, and there's a number of other sides that play in that way. You know, we don't want to go back to what we've had before. That's for sure.
Can we just ask Michael a couple of questions with his inside line on the most junior member of that team. So first of all, I know you can't betray trade secrets, but how has he been since the? Have you seen him at all? Has he been alive? But just secondly, and really, what I'd like to ask is, at the start of this year, Lewis was struggling to get into the team, got the odd minute or two under Paul Gustard and that, and you personally, you wouldn't have seen him play at Premiership level really, because he hadn't. So for a 21-year-old boy to move so fast from the ranks to playing such a significant role in two knockout games, I'm guessing he must have surprised you with how good he's been, as well as he did everyone else.
Okay, first question, he's in good form. I haven't seen him yet. He hasn't surfaced. But Saturday night, Quins did it very well. They had sort of a family and friends sort of barbecue and beer over at the Stoop, and that was really nice. The players all came back there, and then, you know, Isabella and I came home with our other two boys, and he came home for about an hour or so that was nice to get to chat to him and all that sort of thing. But I mean you can imagine what he's like. He's pretty excited about it, and I guess he's been, from, you know, I think his sort of journey over the last year, I think, reflected Quins a little bit, reflected the team. You know, it didn't seem to be a very happy place. And he was sort of told, oh, you're so close, keep doing it. And then he'd never get picked. And none of the other young guys would ever get picked either for any, you know. So yet all the other clubs during COVID, they were using their whole squad. So you were getting a lot of Lewis's sort of contemporaries and you know, from the underage stuff, getting chances and taking them and doing really well. And they felt like they were being left behind a little bit. And then they sort of got their chance when things changed a little bit in January, and Lewis got his chance and he took it. And you know, he played six or seven games in a row and was doing pretty well. And then he started pulling up sore with sort of a groin, lower stomach, sort of back sort of injury. And Quins, you know, while he was still playing and not missing anything, they Quins actually managed him pretty well and pulled him out and said, right, we don't want that becoming chronic. We're going to pull you out and we're going to sort of rehab all that. So it was a very good management sort of decision. While, you know, you've got a 20-year-old kid who's, I just want to play. But they pulled him out. It took a little bit longer to get him better. And so it was just a very good management choice. And then he's come back quite nicely towards the end and got a few runs in the lead up to the final.
Mark, you talked about Quins making some pretty bold selections. Mm. They also have one, I mean, and listen, I completely agree with that. They also have one or two selections that were kind of made for them, really, yeah. which may have in some way helped them. And I don't want to be, I'm going to handle this delicately, but I mean, Mike Brown, who's been an absolute totem for Quins for so many years, and let's not forget his contribution to the overall club. But actually, in many ways, by him not being available for selection, It's kind of changed a little bit of their of how that back three have worked together. I mean, Tyrone Green catches the ball almost as solidly as Mike Brown, almost, and then he's got that ability just to see things that other that maybe Mike or any older players just wouldn't want to see. Which is the first option is just to find another attacker, normally Lewis, and go for it. You know, and also the other selection obviously is Will Evans, who himself was having a hell of a season, and then suddenly. You know, young Jack comes in and gives them not just an ability over the ball, but actually a few other options as well. Yeah. I mean, I just think the selections, a couple of them bold and a couple of them almost forced on them, have all worked in their favour.
Yeah, I'll be honest, when they lost Esterhazy and Brown and Evans, I thought that was any chance they had gone, I'll be honest. You know, I'm going to be wise after the event. And Mike Brown was playing really, really well. And also, to be honest, it's how these things change so quickly, don't they? Because I think most people would have said, you know, Foreman, the back three at Quinn's, first choice, if everyone's fit, it was probably Nathan Earl, who people have heard, right? Mike Brown at fullback, and one of the other wingers, be it Liner or Murley or, and well, that says Tyrone Green hadn't had a run. I mean, I kept saying, "Dan, is he any good, this bloke? I've never seen him play." Mm. And of course, he turns out he's quite tidy. I mean, interestingly, long term, and I might maybe ask Michael this, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Louis play at fullback and Tyrone go back on the wing. I don't think that may or may not happen. But I think, as I said, the selection's been excellent. The other you touched on, I just wanted to mention, is that I don't think people should underestimate how important Quinn's set piece is. Mm. I mean, everyone goes on, well, they're not a great defensive team. I think that's partly the way the game's changed, as we said. But the other element of the game, which is the set piece, their scrum and line out for the last 6 months has been right up there. And nobody talks about Matt Simmons. Nobody. Doesn't ever get a mention. Mm. And yet, their line out's terrific. And the scrum on the right-hand side is just fantastic. I mean, they obliterated Bristol and Wasps in the scrummage. Everybody's talking about all the tries and quite understandably, and Marcus and Louis and Tyrone and people like that. The front five of Quinn's, they leak a lot of tries. That is true. But they don't lose many scrums and they don't lose many lineouts. And when I say I think they're more structured than people give them credit for, they put an awful lot of emphasis on their set piece. And I know people say defence wins championships. I've always said set piece wins championship. If you ain't got a set piece, you cannot win.
Well, yeah, I mean, Mark, both Quinns and Exeter going into the game at the final, both of them the highest scoring teams straight from first phase.
Yeah.
Straight from set piece. So, you know, it's not just what it does to your opponent. It's that ability to, one, win your ball in key areas of the field, but two, to have the confidence to go for it straight from first phase, which was always been it's quite an Australian thing, actually, Michael. Mm. It's always something that, you know, the English have never really, you know, we like to be a bit more structured and go, we're going to go to this breakdown, that breakdown, and we might score two phases later. But I think that's also something that's come in. When you get a strike option, why don't teams just go for it, right?
No, exactly. And you know, we talked about the whole unstructured sort of way of Harlequins play, but there's some basics that have, you know, like the scrum and the line out, they've got those right. They've got a tight five that's very strong. But the big thing for me is if they want to play that way, they have to be fit, and they're really fit. I mean, look at Bristol last week, you know, unbelievably fit. Bristol out in their feet. Rope-a-dope. It was rope-a-dope.
Alex, just before we get on to the Lions, and we had a special man up there for us at Murrayfield, I just wanted to discuss where that final leaves Exeter, because Rob Baxter was magnanimous, as you might imagine, in defeat. He's been there a few times before. He's lost a match that they probably should have won against Saracens when they came from behind. He obviously beat Wasps last season. He knew Quinns were going to be a dangerous side. Do you think he was a little bit shocked and taken aback by their ability to lift their, as we all were, by their ability just to lift their performance yet again? And where do you think it just leaves Exeter very quickly?
I think he was more disappointed that his team weren't as nasty to play against as he wanted them to be. He felt that every time they got a foothold, they were soft on the restart, or they didn't show themselves. And during the week beforehand, he said, what we cannot do is get sucked into playing a game that Harlequins want to play. We will win this game through control. I think Sam Sims said it. We'll win it through control, through set piece. You know, Harlequins matched them and as Mark said, absolutely beat them up front in that set piece battle. And so they had to try and play that way. And they couldn't, even when they had that control in the second half. So I think he was disappointed more in his own team for just not grabbing the occasion by the scruff of the neck in the way that they are used to doing. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if they're not back there next year.
And no, not at all.
They'll roll on and they'll improve and they'll take a pretty painful lesson from that final. But don't bet against them not being in it again next year.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
There was another game of rugby played up at the weekend in Edinburgh. Of course, it was the Lions tour opener against Japan. Having waited so long for this tour to get going, it's in danger of being sort of a cursed tour before it even started. Not only have the British Lions lost their captain, Alan Wynne-Jones, to injury, dislocated shoulder in the first half of that game, and also lost Justin Tipperick, but they boarded a plane last night to Johannesburg at the same time as the country is being taken into level four lockdown by the leaders there. So, Slotty, as our man on the ground, I mean, first of all, the Lions got off to a fast start, but you kind of felt the mood just dropped instantly on the sight of Alan Wynne-Jones clutching his shoulder and going off the field. I mean, very, very sad moment for him and for the Lions. You know, what was the mood up there like after the game with Warren Gatland?
You know, it wasn't as funereal as you might have expected. So when Alan Wynne went off, he didn't make it into the eighth minute. I mean, that's pretty awful, isn't it? For him, very, very sad. He didn't make it the eighth minute. So he goes off and the way he was carrying his left arm, it looked quite likely that it was a tour-ending injury. But then at the end of the game, he was assisting the stands, and after the final whistle, he came onto the field, and he didn't look down as downcast as the news would suggest. And he was shaking hands with people. He didn't have his arm in a sling, but he just had his left hand tucked into the pocket of his tracksuit. So he lifted the trophy that they gave for the game with his right hand, obviously. But he was talking to people, and it wasn't as if people were embracing him and hugging him and saying, you know, poor you. It was, to be honest, he obviously knew at that stage exactly what had happened. I think it's his sort of the final compliment to him as a Lions player, in that he could have had his head down and felt that his sort of rugby life had come to an end, which, you know, maybe it kind of has, but. But he carried on and sort of kept spirits high, and he didn't drag people down with him. So I was really impressed with the way that he carried himself in that respect. But no, that doesn't mean that the Lions haven't lost their captain and a totemic player and someone who was, you know, very, very, very important for a test series against the Lions.
Alex, you I mean, this tour has got to be now, without sounding too dramatic, we like to ask all the hard-hitting questions here on the Ruck podcast. This tour has got to be under threat right from the start, hasn't it? I mean, level 4 lockdown, total alcohol ban, closing schools and a curfew from 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. There's a COVID outbreak in the Springboks camp, 3 players testing positive. I mean, it feels like things are getting worse in South Africa just at the wrong time.
Can I just say that they're thinking of lifting the alcohol ban for the travelling media?
Well, I was going to say, how could you even possibly contemplate going out to South Africa and leaving your hotel with a full-scale alcohol ban? I mean, it has to be under threat. And whilst the players can be given reassurances and the coaches, etc., that, you know, they have got family, loved ones, friends, you know, at home, and it's a very, very difficult thing to go into a country that's clearly a long, long way behind the UK in terms of how it's dealing with this pandemic. And I'm very optimistic, as you all know, ever the eternal optimist. But I have to say that I think there'll be some serious questions, because they'll land, you know, to this news that the country's just going into a level 4 lockdown.
When they accepted or decided to stick with going to South Africa, they did so knowing the risks that one case could derail the whole thing. You only have to look at the cases that have popped up in European Championship squads and players getting COVID when they think they're in a pretty tight bubble. If the schedule in South Africa is so tight that one case inside one of the team bubbles could wipe out a match, two matches could wipe out the series. They've known that from when they committed to going to South Africa. But as you say, Lawrence, the Lions are landing to a country that's with a tighter lockdown. The Springboks are due to play on Friday against Georgia, but they're all of their team are in isolation. And just a further detail which came out today, that although the Lions is permitted to go ahead by the government, only those required to play in the match are allowed to the stadium. Mm. So if we get as far as the test series, there'll be players who won't have played for 3.5 weeks because of the, you know, they're not involved in the test matches. They're not even allowed out of the hotel to go and support the team in the stadium. Now, there'll be players going stir crazy in admittedly fairly nice hotels, but they can't go out, they can't have a drink, they can't even leave to support their mates in the test matches. It's going to be an incredibly difficult series to win. It's going to be an incredibly difficult series for the players and the management to manage and get themselves through. And if we reach the end of it, having played all 8 games, it will be an incredible relief and something of a surprise, I think.
Well, Michael, you can't really call it a tour, can you? I mean, it's not a tour. I mean, and there's now even the notion that actually they may end up playing every single game in Cape Town is what I'm hearing is being discussed at the moment, because clearly that is the lesser of their COVID issues. But I mean, it's just, I can't even imagine what it must be like as a player to have that prospect ahead of you for what is one of the greatest rugby teams in the world.
Lawrence, is almost bordering on cruelty what they're doing to these players, you know. That was the question I was going to ask around this tour, because it's unique, it's got its problems, you know. I'd like to ask Alex and Owen, you know, whether there was any consideration given to Alan Wynne, whether he was going to stay on as a non-playing captain, given that, you know, it could have helped the squad and being a player. I just thought that might have been an option they might have looked at because of the unique nature of this tour.
I don't know if that was discussed, Michael, but I suspect that it wasn't, because there is an outside chance that Alan Wynne could have been fit for the first test. If his shoulder recovers at sort of best speed, then they said that the first test would have been when he would have been able to play again. Mm. You think how the Lions carried Sam Warburton through the last Lions tour in order to get him fit only really for the second test. So they decided, no, we're not going to take that gamble on bringing you just to see if you might be ready for that. Let's just call it quits now. And I suspect that's probably the right thing.
I suspect the Lions will have to be bracing themselves for some tricky questions if this does go wrong, because they had alternative options. They had the offer of going to Australia. There was the option of staging the series here, both of which had opposition, but I think both of which were preferable to playing a series behind closed doors in South Africa, particularly if the whole thing ends up being derailed. They'll have some pretty tricky questions to answer about why they weren't a bit more creative, threw a bit more weight into trying to find safer alternatives. More by safer, I just mean, you know, with an increased chance of success, of completing a series without it being derailed by COVID and at least having some fans in it. Yeah, we're not there yet. And goodness, we hope we get through the series and every game gets played and they're as wonderfully, richly entertaining as our final was on Saturday, but they're just, as Lawrence says, it looks tricky now.
Well, I think there's this very, very difficult to navigate a 37/38 man squad with probably twice as many support staff. I mean, very, very tricky to navigate that safely around South Africa and keep it COVID free. If you're traveling in, you know, from destination to destination. I mean, I just don't understand how you can even attempt to do that. I think they've got to stay in one place now, and they've got to play every game in that city, whether that's Cape Town or whatever decision they choose to make, because I think anything other than that, and I don't see the tour lasting, really. I think they'll end up having to come home, because it clearly shows it doesn't matter what reassurances you're given by the South African government, and I'm sure they were given many in their desperation to get the Lions tour to come to South Africa, but it's now out of control. I mean, the South African government have got far more pressing things on their mind, which is the rest of the nation, let alone the game of rugby. So I have to say, I fear the worst, and you know, it could be over before it even starts, really. And if I was Warren Gatland, I'd be asking those same questions: are we going to be moving, and do we actually want this tour to go ahead now? Yeah. And it's really, really tricky.
I think we got to the point with this tour where we're asking, why is it going ahead? And is it actually going ahead because the financial implications of it not going ahead are too great? I mean, are they just tied into contracts that makes it too expensive to make a sensible decision? So I suspect that is it. But the players still want to go. I mean, they're still going, but they must have huge concerns themselves.
And gentlemen of the press, I mean, are you still wanting to go? I mean, and when are you going?
What, Lawrence, are you asking if I'm looking forward to spending 6 weeks in a hotel with Jonesy where we can't even have a glass of red wine?
that was the most stupid question of the run. Now, listen, chaps, obviously we will be reporting much more on both the Lions tour and all other things to do with rugby. But I'm not going to ask for a god or goddess of the week, but maybe a moment of the game would be the most appropriate, really. And Owen, I'll leave you to last, because you'll have to think about this, because you weren't actually there. And Michael, you know, don't be afraid to indulge us if it was one of your two sons' tries at the weekend. I mean, as if he wasn't happy enough to score one, he scored two. But if there's a moment in the game, Alex, if I start with you, what was your moment of the? In what is the? You know, listen, I was lucky enough to play in five finals. That was the greatest final I've ever watched, and I'm you know, very happy to concede that it was incredible. What was your moment of the game?
We've mentioned already, and it you know, for all the great play and the tries, the moment that springs to mind when you ask that question was Marcus Smith's first kick to the corner, because it set the tone for everything that followed. It set it proved that Quins weren't going to this final and were going to sink into their shell. They were going to play with the ambition and the sort of the free spirit that had got them there. And that just set the tone for everything. And what it did, and one of the things we haven't mentioned yet, was there were only 10,000 fans in that stadium, but it sounded like it was packed. Mm. And it was... And it just triggered everyone to get onto their feet, and a try followed, and then Exeter scored soon after. And the noise in that stadium was wonderful. And it was full of, there were no passengers there. Everyone was there supporting a team. And it just made me think that, you know, when we get that stadium full again, a lot of people go to Twickenham and they take it for granted that, you know, they've been invited there by somebody, and they rock up and have an expensive lunch, and you're just there for the experience. And I would just hope that we, you know, games like that and days like that can, when we get that stadium full again, it'll, you know, people won't take it for granted, and they'll enjoy the occasion as much as those fans did on Saturday. And actually, for me, that the trigger for all of that was that first kick to the corner, which, as Michael said earlier, was about 6 inches the right side of the flag in the end, but it just set the tone for everything that followed.
Mark,
it was after the full time whistle, and. You know, incredibly happy we won, et cetera, et cetera. Wonderful game. And I couldn't help it. I turned to my son and said, I really hope they get Mike Brown involved at this now. I said, this would just, if they get this right now, there's a fantastic, because look, there's been damage from what came before the last 6 months. I mean, as a club, I don't think anyone would want Scott Baldwin to be going now. I don't think anyone would want Mike Brown to be going now. You know, let's not sugarcoat that either. I said to my lad, I really hope they get Mike Brown involved in the ceremony now, because, you know, that wasn't well handled, and it would go some part of the way to, you know, the way we want to be as a club. And when they brought him out with Alex and Stephen, and he was in the middle in the money shot you have every year of the cup being lifted. I thought that was just classy. That was my favourite moment.
But then he stuck out the side.
Yeah, and he dealt with it brilliantly too. And he could see he was really grateful, very, very happy. And then he went to the side and said, "But I didn't play today." That was the subtext of that. I thought the whole moment just was handled beautifully.
It was classy, wasn't it? It was very classy. Michael.
There's a couple for me, so bear with me. My first one, Marcus Smith's conversion of Lewis's second try and his first, and one from the sideline on the other side of the pitch. Unbelievable. I mean, for a young kid to come up and just kick, it didn't ever look like missing. And I thought that when he kicked the conversion to actually get 9 points ahead, I think, after Lewis's second try, I thought that was extraordinary. But the one before that, where he kicked to get 33 to 31 up, extraordinary performance from Marcus Smith all around, but that was special.
Yeah.
Other ones, just quickly, Lewis's first and second try, I must admit, proud dad moment there. And after the game, to see him come over and the first people he hugged were his brothers, I thought that was pretty special as a father.
Well, I think...
Stop it, I'm weeping now.
I'm weeping. I mean, I have to say, I think him embracing you you know, after the game was pretty special too.
That was my next one.
it reminded me of my own mother, because who supported me throughout so many games and would have had the same feelings as well. But actually, just taking it back to the rugby, as someone who's been in that battlefield many, many times before, I thought the moment that Exeter chose to go for goal and kick a penalty, I thought, Quins have got them, you know. I honestly thought you can say it was a mark of respect, but I've watched Exeter Chiefs all season. They haven't done that ever.
No,
right?
No.
They've kicked for the corner, even when they're two, three points up. They're so gung ho. At times, I've almost looked in disbelief, thinking, why don't you take the points? But for them to do it in a final, having not chosen to do it all season, suggested to me that they were feeling the pressure massively. And for once, they made the wrong decision and not the right decision. And I genuinely, and easy in hindsight, I thought Quins are going to win this, because, you know, 5 points difference is not enough in this game. If it's not enough in the first minute for Quins, it's certainly not going to be enough in whatever it was in the 60th minute. So I thought it was some magical moments. They really, really were. Gentlemen.
Well, hang on a sec. What about my favourite moment?
Yeah. No, you don't get to have one because you weren't there. Really.
Okay, but my favourite moment of the game was when my phone finally said full time, because I'd been watching this thing and going, Don Brandt try, Lyoner try, Lyoner try. I'm just going, please stop, I can't take it anymore. And finally, the phone said full time. I went, thank God for that.
Listen, my thanks to Alex Lowe, to you, Owen, in particular, as well as Mark Evans, and of course, Michael, particularly, for giving up your time. Congratulations to all you Quins fans out there. It was just the most magnificent way to be treated on Saturday. The Ruck returns next Monday. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a review. And you can subscribe on Acast, iTunes, or your usual podcast provider.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Hold up.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.